Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to RNIB Tech Talk, your technology show here on RNIB Connect Radio, where we talk, you'll be surprised to hear, technology, high tech, low tech, anything in between. And of course, we hear your opinions too, because at the end of the day, this is your show too. If there's technology that you find fascinating, frustrating, or indeed just very useful and you want to talk about it, you can. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that email address you need. I'm Hubert Pavelkovic, covering for Callum Stoneman this week. And speaking of this week, today we'll be hearing from Envision as Callum Stoneman chats to them about their new Ally Solos glasses. I will be speaking to David Hogg about beta testing, whether it's safe for the public to test, or just in general, what our impressions are of the new Apple operating systems and any precautions you should take. And we will also be digging into the postbag to see what you have been saying to us in your emails. That is all coming up this week. Joining me is our panel of co-hosts, Natalie Curran and Jackie Brown. Let's start with you, Natalie. What's new with tech for you?
I'd say I've had quite a quiet week regarding tech, but I did have a bit of an argument with my iPhone and a link the other day. So what happened was I had a link that had been texted to me, and when I tried to open it, it immediately kicked out to OneDrive, and OneDrive said, you can't open this link, you don't have permission, open in the browser. So I said open in browser, and then it kicked to M365 Copilot, so Microsoft's 365 Copilot, which I should add I didn't even know I had on my phone, and it said the same thing, you don't have permissions to access this, open in browser. And I selected open in browser and it kicked back to OneDrive, and I was going slowly demented, being kicked between these two apps, and it would not take me to Safari for love nor money. So I tried, instead of just double tapping the link, I double tap and held down just out of frustration more than anything else, and that pushed me to Safari. I still couldn't read it because it turned out to be an inaccessible PDF, but at least I got there. So I thought that was something I should mention.
I like how after all that work, all that effort of trying various things, the file was still inaccessible. But it does show that sometimes persevering and trying different things, whether they may work or not, it can eventually get you to a solution. Jackie Brown, what's on your tech radar this week?
Okay, well, I have been looking at, because I don't have any extra boxes on my TV or streaming sticks or anything like that. I just use what the TV offers. We have an LG TV that we've had for 5 years. And I wanted to sort of have a look. I've heard so many people talking about Amazon Fire Sticks, Amazon TV, Apple TV. And I thought, I'm just going to have a troll round to see what's accessible. And do you know something? I'm sorry in a way I started it, because it's a bit of a minefield, because you might find something like, for instance, I finally ordered an Amazon Fire TV Cube, because it seemed to be the most, according to what I've been reading and asking around, it seems to be the most accessible. But it's incredible the amount of, you know, sort of differing opinions that you get about streaming services, whether catch-up TV is accessible, whether audio description is available on live TV if you want to use it. On our TV, we have, it's a smart TV, obviously, so there are apps on it. But if you leave the confines of Voice Guide on LG, you are in no man's land then, because you've got iPlayer, ITVX, Disney, Prime Video, all these apps on the TV, but they don't work with Voice Guide when you go in there. So this is why I wanted to look to see what alternatives there are. And I've settled for the Amazon Fire TV Cube, because it does appear I can turn voiceover on. The A-Lady is incorporated into it, which would be useful. And I believe, from what I've been told, there is audio description as well. And we'll just have to hope that some of that is on live TV as well. If not, I can jump back to our Freeview and do live TV on there with audio description. But I just wanted to try it because I've resisted up until now. It's not been my bag, and I thought I'd really like to have a look at what's out there, but it just seems to be so complicated.
Now, technically, this is a plug, but we're plugging our own show on our own show. But a few months ago, I have spoken to Elliot Stonehill, accessibility consultant, about this very topic because you are right, Jackie. It is a minefield for me. I have an Apple TV with my Samsung TV, and I use the Apple TV for everything apart from the Freeview TV side of things, for which I then use my Samsung TV screen reader, which proves to be wonderful. But there's so many things to definitely uncover there. So when you get it, do let us know. I mean, why not record us a demo, Jackie? We'd love to hear that. For me, I've been having more fun with beta testing. Now, by fun, this is something that isn't mentioned in my chat with David Hogg because I've done a few more things since. There's a little warning for people who may hear the chat and may be curious to test iOS 26 public betas. Be mindful, there is a major accessibility issue that I have found with a couple of other friends where it's not consistent, but VoiceOver, when you restart your phone running one of the public betas, may not actually start, and you won't be able to turn on using the accessibility shortcut either. That's inconsistent, and so far I've seen it happen on two different iPhones. Not always on the iPad. My iPad was fine. So it's inconsistent, but something to keep in mind. Other features I've tested include Hold Assist and the music auto mix feature, which is interesting because if you find the auto mix feature is quite nice, but it doesn't count your play counts for songs correctly, which if you're a person that is obsessed with stats like me, not very good. Hold Assist, on the other hand, is quite wonderful because you can put your phone down when you're on hold, and technically, your device will let you know when the caller picks up. But beware because you know when there's the on-hold music, and every now and again we go, "Well, thank you for holding. Your call is very important to us." Or if you'd like to, your problem might be solved via our website rather than you hanging on the line. So go there. It takes that as the person answering the call. So you may actually be interrupted more times by the Hold Assist than, well, you'd like to be. So that's a few observations. But one of my big favorites, the journal app. I love having separate journals, and being able to currently do that is fantastic.
But that doesn't sound very good, Hubert, with the public beta at the moment, that when you restart your phone, that it doesn't you don't get VoiceOver. That sounds a bit iffy. But I'm sure by the time the proper release comes out, that it will, it will resolve itself. You At least we would like to think so.
Yeah, I think it's one of these things with beta testing. You do run these risks, unfortunately. Hence why, I always say it's something that and Apple says this too. You do it at your own risk because things can go wrong. This is one of the most stable betas I have seen. But yes, there is that issue, which I think the inconsistency is the frustration because I don't want to say don't go and do it because this will happen. But equally, it can. So it's something like I've installed my beta on my phone with a sighted person just in case it does happen, and it did, and they had to help me. But once it's done, it was fine. But yes, if you don't have that sighted person or you don't have a secondary device to test it, then perhaps just maybe hold off. Well, stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, I'd like to welcome back to Tech Talk, Karthik Kannan from Envision. How's it going, Karthik? You're becoming regulars here.
Yes, we've been having a lot of things going on at Envision. I always like talking to the R&IB about it because, I like the conversations we have on these podcasts. So super, super excited to be here again, Callum, and thanks for having me over.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. So Ally has been out publicly a few months now. It's been in, obviously it was in beta a long time before that, but it's now public, and we heard last week how it's going to it's opening up access to museums and all kinds of other places. How's all that going? What's the feedback been like?
It's been phenomenal. I think museums have traditionally been places where you could go and experience art if you're a sighted person, but then if you're someone who is blind or low vision, museums don't really feature too much on people's radars because most of the artwork is fairly inaccessible. They not very tactile, especially if you're going in and looking at a painting. It's usually a very different experience for a blind or low vision person than for a sighted person. So a lot of people that we were doing pilots with, we took a lot of testers from the Bay Area in San Francisco, and to these, to the exhibits, and we ex let them experience Ally. And a lot of people gave us some amazing feedback. They came back and said these museums, which were otherwise places where they needed sighted assistance, they could now enjoy, these artworks independently by themselves. They could simply use Ally to ask a question, about the artwork, like, can you describe this for me? And then we've got these accessible, descriptions, and Ally would talk to them about what the artwork is about, in a way that makes sense for somebody who's blind or low vision. And then, the beauty of it is it's not a one-way street, right? It's a two-way communication. So you can go ahead and ask follow-up questions about the artwork. Oh, can you tell me what this particular type of chair is about, or what's the color of purple that you just described right now? Or could you tell me a little bit more about the texture of the painting or the history? Or you could just dive into an artwork and just get lost in it for hours, on end. And museums really like that because they feel like, it's opening up doors to a completely new audience. Artists like that because, they also feel like now their work has a lot more meaning because, it's not just for one particular section of the population. It's now starting to open itself up to more people. So everyone across the board is really, really happy with how it's going out. So we're talking to more museums right now, and I think by the end of the year, we will be in a lot more museums across not just the US but also in the UK as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And Ally, of course, is a general AI service as well that people are using in their everyday lives. How's the feedback going on that?
It's been phenomenal. I think Ally, for those of the audience who don't know, is a conversational AI assistant for people who are blind or low vision. Essentially, if people know about the Envision AI app, which a lot of people use, or the Envision glasses, you know that you need to have the app basically has a bunch of buttons, and then you press a particular button to activate a certain function, right? So you want to read text, you click on scan text, and you read. And then you can scan documents, or if you want to get a description of a scene, you click a button and it gives you a description of a scene. With Ally, we took all of that and just made it more interactive. So you could simply hit one button and start a conversation with Ally, and you could just go back and forth with it. So you could say, hey, can you read this menu for me and tell me what the vegan appetizers are? And Ally will know that you are looking to scan a document, will open up scan text, go through the whole flow of scanning a document, and then just, get the text from there. And then read it out to you, or answer your question that you just asked, right? Or you could just walk in the surroundings, and then you can just say, "Hey, can you describe this to me?" And an Ally would just quickly take a picture and describe it to you. And you can go back and forth with Ally. You can ask questions about what it just described, and so on. And you could use Ally to look up the weather. You could use Ally to access your calendar. So you could say, "Hey, what's on my agenda today? And do I need to carry an umbrella for my 2 o'clock meeting?" Right? And Ally would be able to answer that for you. So those are things that people are using Ally for. It's a free app. It's available on iOS, available on Android and the web. And also the really cool thing with Ally is it's very personalizable. So you can share information about yourself to Ally, and that will help Ally kind of cater or change its responses, based on what you've given it. You can also create different allies. So this is also a feature that people really like. I know I thought it was a gimmick in the beginning when we introduced it. It didn't feel like it was something that people will really care about. But then people make dozens of allies. They just keep making different allies. One ally is like Maud from My Little Pony. I don't even know these things. It's like I'm also learning pop culture from all the different allies that people are making. Some people are like making Alfred from Batman, and some people are making Jack Sparrow from Pirates of the Caribbean. And the beauty is that, Ally just takes on that personality and talks to you in that personality. So it just feels a little bit more unique than just a regular AI assistant. So that's also something people are really liking.
And speaking of Ally and all the different services that it can interact with and all the different products that it's available on. I believe you've got something something interesting in that sense in terms of products to talk about.
Yes, and I'm super excited to talk about it. We are now launching Ally on a next generation wearable. It's called the Ally Solos glasses. So Solos is the company that we are partnering with. It's a company based out of Hong Kong that makes smart eyewear, and we're partnering with them to essentially put Ally onto these wearables. The Solos glasses, they look like any other pair of glasses. In fact, if I was wearing them and walking down the street, it's almost impossible to tell that it's smart glasses, right? So it looks and feels like a pair of regular glasses. It's got two HD cameras. So unlike the Envision glasses, which only have one camera on it, on the right-hand side, it's got two HD cameras, able to capture almost 4K resolution, images. You have the glasses themselves only weigh about 42 grams, which is 1.5 ounces. That's basically the same weight as a prescription, lenses or prescription glasses itself. So it's not heavier than a usual pair of glasses. And it offers an all day battery life. So users, essentially what they can do is they can get about 10 hours of battery life with Ally Solos glasses. They just take them out of the case, put them on. There are no menus, there are no buttons, none of that stuff. You just put on the glasses and you can start a conversation with Ally hands-free, right? So you could basically wear these glasses, go outdoors, ask Ally questions about your environment. You could be at in your office and you could be wanting to read a piece of, text or a document, and these glasses can do that for you. They can recognize faces of friends and family. They can recognize your personal belongings. They can give you descriptions of objects. So basically Ally does everything, Ally Solos glasses do everything the Ally app does, but you can do all of that in a hands-free manner. Pairing the glasses to your phone is just a matter of like 30 seconds. You can just take out the glasses, pair it to your phone once, and that's it, right? So it's a very, very easy to use, but still quite powerful because it has Ally running on it to help you with everything.
So are these, like the current Envision glasses are standalone. I mean, they do need a data connection for some features, but they don't necessarily require a smartphone to be connected all the time. Are these similar?
No, they're the opposite. They do require a smartphone to be, you do need to connect them to a smartphone, right? You need to be able to, it's like using your AirPods or or Apple Watch or any of those kind of connected devices, right? So you connect the glasses for one time to your phone, and then from that point on, you can just take out the glasses from the case, put them on, and then they automatically connect to your phone, right?
Yeah.
The glasses, the main reason for that was one, it allows, we've seen from Envision glasses users itself that most of the times, nowadays people are around their phone all the time, right? They pretty much travel with their phone when they go outside. They use their phone at home extensively. So it felt like, we can just cut out having to have a standalone device if we can just reliably connect to the phone all the time. That way, users don't have to worry about constantly connecting their glasses to a Wi-Fi network or a hotspot connection, which is a big deal because, you don't have to, if you're going to a new place, as long as your phone is connected to the internet or the Wi-Fi in that place, you don't have to worry about your glasses connecting to that Wi-Fi as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So because it uses your phone for processing, it just makes the whole thing simpler. Another thing about having this kind of a design is that it makes it incredibly affordable. The Ally Solos glasses are at, they basically start at $399 in the pre-order phase. So that is, again, remarkably, cost-effective compared to other wearables in the segment and even the Envision glasses that we launched about 5 years ago, right? So this really helps reduce costs as well as, ensuring that it makes it a much more easier to use device.
Yeah, I was going to come on to the price because that's, just to be clear, that's $399. And obviously that is a huge price cut compared to the current Envision glasses, which start at, am I right in saying they start at about $1,500 for the Reed model around about that.
Correct. Yeah.
So is that because you're partnering up with, I haven't heard of Solos, to be completely honest, but I'm guessing they're a mainstream company. I don't know if you can really answer this, but from a business point of view, like, how have you managed to make it such a, such an affordable amount?
Yeah, I think it's two things, right? I think one, smart glasses have gotten a lot more mainstream over the last couple of years than what they were when we first started the Envision glasses, right? So when we started the Envision glasses, in fact, Envision was the most affordable choice in the market at that time. You had Orcam, which was at least 2 times the cost of the Envision glasses going in, right? So we kind of kept looking for, indicators in the market, where we kept looking for trends, we kept looking for directions in which the smart glasses industry is heading. In fact, I was just telling somebody the other day, I think we can literally open a smart glasses museum with the amount of smart glasses we have accumulated over the last 5 years, right? I mean, we have the most amount of smart glasses, samples in the world, I can tell you, in our office in the Netherlands. So we kept researching options, and it became very clear over the last year that smart glasses are becoming mainstream. The Ray-Ban Metas are, a good starting point. I mean, they kind of kickstarted this idea in a sense of, hey, wait, we can build smart glasses and we can make them cheap. So that, revolution kind of happened. More and more people started getting into making smart glasses, which overall kind of made smart glasses cheaper, so there was a lot more supply, there was a lot more demand, and so there was more innovation and resources being put into smart glasses all of a sudden. And so that was one reason. The second reason is the fact that we don't need, we realized, with how powerful smartphones have been getting, how reliable, Bluetooth low energy and other technologies to connect devices together are getting, we realize we don't need to have a very powerful onboard computer, right? Which really reduces the cost of these kind of devices. Because the moment you have a computer that's on your face, like the Envision glasses, you need to think of battery life. You need to think of okay, we need to ensure the device doesn't heat up too much. We need to think about weight. You need to think about a lot of things like that. Whereas with the Ally Solos glasses, since a lot of the processing happens on device, on the phone, we could go ahead and reduce the cost of the glasses further, because we don't need to have like a powerful computer on board to do that. And we just rely on Bluetooth low energy and Wi-Fi to be able to connect reliably to the glasses and stuff. So that was one of the reasons why we are able to, again, reduce the cost dramatically. And also, I think the cost of AI over the last few years have again come down. It's the it's it's I think somebody at OpenAI was saying the other day that intelligence is getting too cheap to meter. I think that's quite true. And we're definitely, also capitalizing on that revolution. So a lot of things coming together to make this price point actually work.
And does this require, because Ally has the free plan, but there is also a pro plan. Does this require the subscription for the glasses?
Yes, it does require a subscription for the glasses. We do offer a free trial of the pro version with the pre-order campaign, but then people can just make a purchase off a pro plan right after. And yeah, right now the prices are quite cheap. We are offering $10 per month, or £10 per month, and £100 per year. That's basically the cost of that, and it gives access to unlimited number of conversations, a lot of premium features on Ally, and so on. Yeah.
So in terms of functionality, I mean, you mentioned there's no menus, because I think the previous Envision glasses had the different options, as you said before. You had like scan mode and reader mode and all these different face recognition and all these different kind of options. This is, I'm guessing you just ask your question and it knows what to do, I'm guessing, is what you mean by that.
Exactly. I think that's exactly how it works, and it might seem a little too simplistic, but I think people who have used Ally on the phone really know that this is how it works, right? You really just ask what you need. It's like a genie, literally. You just ask what you need, and then it will like understand what you're talking about, and then help you out with it. And this is only going to get smarter and smarter and smarter. Like over the last year, ability the general AI's ability to understand what you're saying, and then pick the right tool to solve the problem has gotten dramatically better. In fact, we are now kind of using the latest GPT-5 models, in Solos classes, and it's a phenomenal model when it comes to being able to pick the right tool based on what you ask, right? It's one of the biggest strengths of the GPT-5 model, and so we're able to leverage state-of-the-art AI like that, and then build our own AI as tools that this particular AI can call, right? And so we're just basically taking all that we have learned with the Envision AI app and the Envision glasses, and then building these, niche AI tools, and then having a really smart AI call these tools at the right time and orchestrate the whole thing. And that's only going to get smarter and smarter, as the months go by.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm on the I was on the beta for Ally. In fact, I still am. And when I first downloaded it, I had a general kind of conversation with it, and I was like, "Okay, well that's great, but you say it can take pictures and scan documents, but what do you mean? Where's the camera button? You don't need it."
Yeah. There's no camera button. There's it's not needed. So you simply say something like, "Hey, what's in front of me?" Or "What color is this bottle?" Or "Can you describe this this window to me?" Or "Could you read what's on my screen?" Or "Could you take a for could you like tell me what vegan appetizers are in the menu?" So these are things that that you ask, and the camera opens and closes as and when needed, right? So it also saves a lot of battery. So we don't need to like constantly have the camera open. We don't need the users to tap on a specific camera button to open the camera. You simply ask it, and then Ally will actually go ahead and open the camera, take a picture when needed, and then close it back on. So you can save battery, and you can keep having longer conversations with it.
Now, again, I know it's early days yet, but what does the future look like for these glasses? Because we've seen, for example, with the Meta Ray-Bans, we've seen Be My Eyes come to those. Aira have got their method through WhatsApp. Is there any scope or any ability for other apps to get involved on these?
Definitely. I think, these are still early days, so we're talking to a bunch of partners. We're looking to partner with a whole host of the usual suspects in the accessibility industry, so to speak. So we already have a partnership with Aira on the Envision glasses, we also have a bit of a partnership with Be My Eyes as well on the Envision glasses. So we're going to definitely keep pushing the partnership angle, work together with a lot of these folks who bring the human element in here, we'll see how that goes. Well, right now we don't have any announcements to make on that front, I'll save it for a later episode of Tech Talk. Yeah.
Okay, and if people want to learn more about these and order them, how do they do that?
So people can go ahead and pre-order the glasses today on the Ally website. So they can go to ally.me/glasses. That's Ally dot me slash glasses, GLASSES. You can go ahead and pre-order your glasses over there. And we ship end of September. That's when we hope to ship these glasses. And we'll be more than happy if you support us in this campaign. It's a very new type of device. It's really pushing the state of the art in AI, in smart glasses, and it's a pretty comfortable pair of glasses to wear. So I'm super excited to see what the community's feedback on that is.
Absolutely, and I think that price is a huge selling point. I mean, it brings it in line with everything that's out there. I mean, I'm certainly interested to try these. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And these glasses come with a 30 days no questions asked return policy as well. We offer that for all of Envision's products. So it also extends to purchases made during the pre-order time as well. So people can just go ahead and check out the glasses on our website. That's ally.me/glasses. If they like it, they can just go ahead and purchase it. And we're hoping to ship the stuff by the end of September. And fingers crossed, we'll be able to make a dent in the space.
Yeah, absolutely. Great news. Well, we look forward to seeing how these develop. Karthik Kannan from Envision, thanks so much for joining us to chat about the Ally Solos glasses.
Thank you so much.
time now on RNIB Tech Talk to talk beta testing. Now, what are we exactly talking about? Well, in this case, we will be talking about the upcoming releases of, in this particular chat, iPadOS and iOS 26, the operating systems for iPad and iPhone, respectively, which are coming out on, well, sometime in September. But wouldn't it be great to have access to it before everyone basically gets access to it, which sounds a bit risky, but, well, that's the whole fun of beta testing, right? I'm joined by a fellow techie, voice well-known to RNIB Connect Radio, Mr. David Hogg. How are you?
I'm doing very well. This is my Tech Talk debut.
I was going to say, we've had, like, interviews that you've done on Tech Talk, but as a contributor like that, that's your debut. How do you feel?
Yeah, it's great to finally be here. All those years of tinkering with iOS shortcuts and installing betas onto my phone, I've made it.
This is the fun part. So when it comes to beta testing, the easiest way to explain this is you're basically testing the operating system before it actually comes out to the general public, correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Apple have their Worldwide Developers Conference usually the first week of June. And after that, they release the developer beta of their upcoming software for app developers, pretty much, to get their apps ready for the proper release come September. But you can install it on your phone, on your iPad, on your Mac even, and play about with all of the new features.
Now, before we actually talk about this particular version, I think it's safe to talk through some precautions before you actually do this, because at the end of the day, and Apple say this themselves, there's no guarantee that something won't go wrong. It's quite likely that things might. So before you install the betas, do remember to A, back up your devices, and this rule technically should be followed, but as you're about to find out, me and David haven't. You shouldn't install this beta on your primary device, i.e. the device you're using on a daily basis and you really need it. So if you have a phone that you take with you everywhere and your iPad that maybe stays at home, just install it on the iPad, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't do what myself and Hubert done, or especially what I've done. Going back to, I think, iOS 13, I just install it on everything across the board. And that some rather bad consequences. I think iOS 13 in particular, the phone call app just wouldn't work. Couldn't make phone calls on my very expensive phone for a couple of weeks. But we got there eventually. But yeah, it is very risky. So if you're going to install the public beta, then do please back up your devices first.
Yeah, I've installed it on my phone, but that is because I tried it on the iPad first and it was stable. That is my reasoning and it works in my head.
I installed the developer beta on my phone as soon as I could, knowing full well that I was going to have a few weeks of pretty sketchy battery life and some just a hot phone for a while. What can I say here, but I like living on the edge. So far, so good. It has been stable for the most part. There's obviously been little tweaks as the cycle has gone on, but framework wise the software has been pretty stable, and that's been the case for the past few years now with iOS betas.
Yeah, I think my last bad experience goes back to iOS 9, I think, where I've updated and installed the beta version onto my iPad. And what proceeded was the entire podcast app was broken, where everything in the app was basically dimmed. You couldn't do anything on the podcast app. And that was one of the apps I was using to death on the iPads, which made me roll back. But I certainly not as bad as your phone call issue.
Yeah, that was a dark time. Quite fitting, given that was the year they brought in dark mode.
Hey, good pun. Everyone loves a good pun. There we go. Got that ticked off. Right, so let's talk about this one then. So iOS 26 and iPadOS 26, quite revolutionary with a lot of features. We will talk other features, but the one I want to particularly talk to you about as a low vision user is Liquid Glass, because when I've heard it announced, to me, it doesn't really make much of a difference. But when they were describing how it visually acts and looks, I was concerned for the low vision users. What's your thoughts on this?
So just a little bit of background. This new Liquid Glass is Apple's new design language across their entire suite of OSs. You've got things pretty much looking like Liquid Glass. You've got flowing animations of buttons flowing out of each other, and yeah, very smooth liquid-like animations across the board, across all of Apple's OSs. And it has taken some tweaking to get to a point where most of the text is legible. Like the Photos app, for a while you couldn't see the buttons at the bottom of your library and so on, just because it was covered by, because everything was so clear, the menus were so clear, that your photos behind them were making the text of the buttons very difficult to read. Which, if you're in those apps all the time, and to know by muscle memory, it's not too bad. But from a legibility standpoint, Notification Center as well was really bad for the first couple of betas. And they've slowly managed to make the notifications legible by dimming the wallpaper behind them. But you get this with beta cycles. It is trial and error most of the time to iron out all the bugs so that come September, when the proper iOS 26 is released, that it is usable for everybody.
Yeah, and I think the good thing is about Liquid Glass, from what I've heard at least anyway, you can, or you are able to actually turn it off if you really don't want it.
Yeah, I've not poked about in the accessibility settings too much. I usually wait until the full proper OS is out in September to do that. But yeah, there are ways that you can reduce motion and reduce transparency and stuff like that to make it as legible as it can be. But it's taking Apple a little bit of time to, just on the face of it, get it in the standard OS to make it more legible.
Any other features that kind of stand out to you that were not there in iOS 18?
So there's a few, and one that I know, Hubert, you're going to be a big fan of, is in iPadOS 26, they've got local recordings for, say, if you're doing a Microsoft Teams call or a Zoom call or something like that, it records locally to your device. So you've got a backup in your downloads folder, as opposed to just from whatever conferencing app you're using. And that is, I think they said during WWDC that this is specifically for podcasters who are able to record stuff on the go if they're traveling or whatever, and all they've got is their iPad. So that's one that I'm really looking forward to getting back into, should I ever pick up an iPad again. But apart from that one, I'm really enjoying the Hold Assist at the moment. I've just moved house, so I'm having to change my address with a lot of people, which means I'm on the phone a lot and getting lots of different Hold music, so I can just press Hold Assist, go about the rest of my day, and when somebody actually picks up, it'll plonk me right back into the phone call where I was.
And does it work reliably for you? Are you regularly put back into the phone call?
Yeah, it's pretty reliable. I've not had any of false positives or a bit of a clunky way back into the conversation. It works as advertised.
I love that. I mean, I'll certainly use it with my doctors to squeeze my phone personality through the 31 people in the queue. That will send you quite helpful. I do love local capture, which is the audio feature you mentioned, purely because I find sometimes when you record and you use apps such as Teams or Zoom, not everyone knows how to use them. And they go, can you give me a phone call? Which is good, but the quality of the phone call is not great. So if I could just FaceTime call someone to get a better quality and record it locally, that's fantastic. That revolutionises things quite a bit for audio creators.
Yeah, absolutely. As we said, it's going to be used, I think, primarily from podcasters. And you know, we both consume the work of someone like Federico Vitici, who loves the iPad to death, and this has got him back on board with using the iPad as his primary computer. So I'm really looking forward to see all the different ways that people can make this be great.
Well, as many headlines said from many kind of tech operators, including 9to5 Mac, you know, everyone's saying Apple have fixed the iPad with iPadOS 26. Some of the other features that stood out for me, and maybe they can be a bit more niche, I do quite like the music app changes. There's the auto mix feature for transitions between songs, which is interesting in a sense that actually there's a little bug which cuts the music out for a millisecond before a transition is about to occur. So you'll always know when it's coming, which kind of makes it less seamless for me. But it sounds interesting nevertheless. You also have journal app changes, which I quite like. I love journaling, and I like journaling about more than just my thoughts, which isn't the most interesting topic. I like to journal about traveling. I like to journal about tech. I like to journal about so many different things. And you can now have individual journals, which I think is really good, because you can that way just keep things more organized, which is quite decent.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many like tiny little features that we're not going to know about now, and we're not going to know about until September, October, November, when everybody's had a chance to sit down with their software and properly comb through it.
And I quite like these videos they do. It's like 26 features that Apple haven't told you about with the new iOS, including new podcasts app features as well, which, again, are quite niche but quite fun, including more speed options, because me and you love to listen to podcasts at crazy speeds.
Yeah, what are you at now?
I've managed to get to 2x speed. I can't access the speed options past 2x speed. It says swipe for more speeds. And I'm not sure how to do it with my accessibility with VoiceOver yet, but I'm going to try and figure out, see if I can, because my audiobook reading on Audible is 2.15.
You're a braver man than me. I'm 1.8.
Oh, well, there you go then. That's a bit about beta testing. If you do fancy it, you can. And the way to do it on iPad and iPhone, if you go to your settings app, go to General and Software Update, tap on Beta Update to... and then there, tap on iOS or iPadOS 26 beta, depending which device you are using. You will then be able to install it on your device. But remember, backup first, and do not use your primary device in case things go wrong. But yes, David Hogg, thank you very much for joining us, your debut, and hopefully not your last appearance, on RNIB Tech Talk.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Let's open our postbag then, shall we? We have heard from David, who is wondering this. Is there a mobile phone that responds only to voice commands and no touch gestures or buttons? Jackie Brown, any ideas?
The only one I can think of is the Real Sam in your pocket. I believe that is all voice driven. It's a smartphone, obviously, that it's been based on. But it has no buttons, so you do everything by voice. I think you can use it as a mobile phone for text messages, calls. The big sell for this particular phone, obviously, is the RNIB Talking Book Library, so you can download all your books and things. I believe you can buy the phone outright, which is quite expensive. But I think you can also, have it as a data plan kind of thing, a sort of a 2-year plan. So it might be worth your while getting in touch with realsam.co.uk and seeing what they have to offer.
The only thing that I thought of was the fact that iPhone does have a voice control aspect as well. So yes, there's Siri. But in the same accessibility settings area where you find VoiceOver, find voice control. And I've played with it a little myself. The only thing to flag is if you're running VoiceOver at the same time, you need to wear headphones. Otherwise, voice control listens to VoiceOver and you end up in a rather funny loop. But it might be worth giving that a go if that's something you already have, or like Jackie said, looking at the Real Sam device available.
See, I've given voice control a go, and I found two things. One is that you have to be very specific with your commands, which can be a bit tricky sometimes. And the other thing is it doesn't fully control the phone, which, again, if that's what you're looking for, could be a bit of an issue. But if you have anything to suggest, well, drop us an email with some ideas. We would love to hear it. Next, then... Well, we are hearing from down under. It's Peter from Australia who's gotten in touch, and he asks this. Do you know of an app which is suitable for blind people who wish to ride an exercise bike at home? The apps I've tried to find so far all have visual applications, such as videos, or you have to have a visual meter on the bike itself. And any other advice on keeping active? Well, Peter, listen out for future episodes of Tech Talk. We might see if we can find someone that can talk about it in a bit more detail for you. Any other techie exercise tips from you guys? Jackie, any other tips?
No.
Natalie?
Yeah, it wasn't cycling, but I did once have a look on YouTube for Zumba videos, And I was rather intrigued to find that there is a channel or somebody who does sort of visually impaired Zumba videos. And what they did was they described the area to use and how to think about it. And then they incorporated that into all their instructions. So I would actually suggest looking on YouTube less for an app and more for a channel that's maybe taking a similar approach for cycling. And with regards to exercise in general, I have done both a similar thing before myself, where I found online exercise videos that were reasonably descriptive that I could follow when I was in COVID and lockdown and doing it at home. But also I've managed to find a gym where they have a large range of classes and I go along there. And I find having a real person in the room means you can ask questions or even just stand there looking confused until they come over to help. So they're the methods that I've found work for me.
There is an exercise app, I believe. It's called Revision Fitness. I did subscribe to it some time ago, where it has been developed with visually impaired and blind people in mind. So Revision Fitness might be worth having a look at, because I think they have lots of videos with, if you like, audio description or, you know, just explanations of what's going on. So give that a go as well.
Now, we have received several emails regarding the changes to the JAWS pricing structure. And let's just say there's quite a lot to unpack. However, next week on the show, we will be speaking to Sight and Sound to try and provide some clarity on all the information before anyone makes any purchases. So do join us for that. For now, though, Jackie and Natalie, thank you very much. Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to talk technological innovations and work in accessible technology. We will focus on something fairly specific, as you're about to find out, because joining me now is Ad Spears, a lecturer in robotics and machine learning at Imperial College London. Ad, thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to be on the show.
So we'll talk about a few things, including your work with Make Sense Technology and the Vector Navigation Device. But what I would like to find out first is, what inspired you to work in, you know, accessible and assistive technology?
Right, yeah. So I started working in the area as an undergraduate, actually. So it was my undergraduate project, which we at the time called the Haptic Torch, which was a very simple navigation tool to aid low vision people in detecting obstacles that were beyond the reach of the white cane, basically. That was in 2004, I think I graduated. And, you know, I really kind of got a bug at the time to, like, continue with that. It was really rewarding work, really interesting. Got to meet some very interesting people during testing. And then since then, I've kind of not stopped working in assistive tech, really.
I've been looking at your Vector navigation device, and the principle of it sounds quite interesting. So get into more detail on how it works in a second, but can you give us a little bit of an introduction to how this project came about?
Sure. So we started working on just generally seeing what we could do with the technology that I've been developing in the past. In particular, there was a device I made called the S-Barn, which was a stands for shape-based assistance for navigation. I built that at the Max Planck Institute in Germany. And that was kind of a shape-changing device that we only could test in virtual reality, because at the time it was COVID. There were other restrictions on health and safety and things like that. And Rob was really interested in this device, and we kind of wanted to try it out in the real world. As Make Sense is being formed, we started playing around with different concepts of that. As more people were joining the team, it developed further and further, and we ended up with this very nice prototype device, which if you kind of imagine a remote control or a torch, a flashlight, that can bend its body in the middle. So this was like an early prototype. Vector doesn't look like this anymore, but it could bend its body in the middle to give you guidance. So as you was holding it, if it bent to the left, it meant that you should point to the left or you should walk to the left. And it could also bend up and down and to the right and by varying degrees. So that was kind of how we started out with that. And we ended up with doing a study in my lab where we were comparing how people were using this device for navigation between sighted people using virtual reality interfaces and blind people just using how the device felt. And we ended up with some really nice results, really promising, published a nice paper on it. And that in Nature Scientific Reports, actually. And that took us forward into kind of, well, where do we go with this? We did some more user testing. We found that that interface was really nice for the trials we were doing in the lab, but not so good for the real world. So now the Vector device still has this kind of, you know, one-handed kind of elongated form, you know, like how you would hold a flashlight in a way. But instead, the interface is now this this bump that you put your thumb on. You basically put your thumb on this raised indent that then moves left and right to kind of guide you as you're walking down the street, you know, so following kind of paths in a way. So I actually tried the device for the longest time I have you know, recently, and before I kind of tried it for a short amount of times, but I had a long walk around Battersea blindfolded with the device recently, and it was guiding me like around all sorts of obstacles. It doesn't do obstacle detection in real time. It does it based on what's been pre-coded into it, you know, like a lamppost and things like that, guiding me all around different streets, crossing roads, through the park. Yeah, so that's kind of a summary of how it works in a way.
So there's a few interesting points here. The first one I'm curious about is, you know, you've said that the form factor has very much changed a little bit in the sense that it's not the kind of middle of the device that changes shape, but more rather now something you put your thumb on. What caused that change? You mentioned some trials. What, you know, what sort of points convinced you that that sort of change was needed? What's better in this change of the form factor that wasn't there in the old version of this device?
So it basically came from lots of what I would say informal user testing at MakeSense. So when we do user testing in the university, in my laboratory, everything's very formalized. We go through you know, an ethics body and things like that before we can even do a simple questionnaire. At MakeSense in the company, things run differently, and we can just invite people in, give them the device, let them walk around and say, well, what do you think? And lots of people were saying that the shape change that went up and down was very confusing, because that was meant to indicate how far forwards or backwards you were supposed to walk. And in previous devices I built, which were more kind of cube shaped, that were held in different ways, that was useful. In this device, we found that it wasn't working quite so well once you left the laboratory and got out into the real world. The bending aspect of the device was quite kind of over-engineered in a way for that application. I think it probably still has other applications in other kind of technologies, but for this, it was found that this thumb kind of just moving the thumb around was equally compelling, had like as much information transfer to the user while being a lot simpler and allowing you to maintain a firm grip on the device, which we found was important. It was also, it's easier to make, which in the end of the day, we're trying to create a product. So, you know, you don't want things that are going to break, especially when someone's out walking in the world. You know, if their device fails during a path, that could be quite, well, it wouldn't be good, right? So there was a number of kind of both user-centered decisions and also engineering-based decisions for that change.
How does the device then work if it's not detecting obstacles to help you navigate around them? What does it do?
Yeah, sure. That's another great question. So what we're trying to do basically is extend beyond what you can do with your guide cane or your guide dog and actually plot routes across cities. The idea is that you have predefined routes that take into account various aspects of the urban you know, urban space. So those can either be set by predefined by someone who is familiar with the user, so like a friend who can use a sighted interface, or defined by MakeSense and then downloaded by the user. But it's basically guiding you across a city. So, you know, you can't say to your guide dog, I want to be taken to this you know, this new office building where I have a meeting or something like that. But if there's a predefined route for that recorded in the MakeSense device, in the MakeSense kind of server, then it will guide you along that route. So we're calling it place and trace. So beforehand, you kind of place a route, and then the device guides you along that route.
Now, is there a point in time, possibly, where people can practice what I've heard referred to as freestyle navigation, i.e., using it to detect things and trace routes that have not been programmed? Or is it a case that really the only way it will work is by having pre-programmed routes?
Well, so we're thinking about that at the moment. So at present, we're kind of doing an incremental design, so we're starting off with these pre-programmed routes, and also the idea that someone could walk a route and it could record that route, and then use that route in the future. So you might, walk that route once or twice, or have a friend walk that route for you, or things like that, and then it would remember that. But I think that the scope of it doing kind of free navigation, avoiding obstacles and things, that's kind of in the future. That's not on the current kind of development pipeline, because already it's quite even kind of just following a regular route with normal GPS that would be in a smartphone is quite difficult. So we use a particular kind of high accuracy GPS in the device to allow us to follow these routes that are either predefined or could be walked by someone.
And how do you operate the device's functions, finding routes and things like that? Is it done via the device itself with built-in speech, or is it done via an app, maybe on your phone?
It's through an app, yeah. So the device pairs with a smartphone. So you actually the sensing of the device, the way it knows where it is in the world. There's GPS built into the device, as I mentioned, the kind of high resolution GPS, but then it's also using cameras from your phone. So you actually wear the phone on a kind of chest mount, and the phone, while you're walking, you're getting the touch feedback, the haptic feedback through the device, which is moving under your thumb. This point I mentioned, the phone's also talking to you, so the phone is communicating with the device.
What stage are we at in terms of the availability of the device?
So right now the device is still in prototype stage, but we are recruiting testers in and around London. So if anyone wants to get involved in testing of the device, that'd be good. The idea, where the plan going forward is, in Q4 of this year, we're undertaking a trial with Guide Dogs UK, and then the idea is that there will be a discounted commercial product available in spring next year. So that's kind of the timeline of the device.
You've mentioned potential testing. If people would like to take part, they can get in touch. So if people would like to do so, how can they go about it?
Sure. So if you go on our website, makesensetechnology.com, and then on the product page, there's a lot of information about the device, and then at the bottom there's a way to sign up to join the testing program. So that's the way to do it, basically.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to following the development of the Vector device. It sounds quite an interesting navigation device, so it would be good to hear more about it once trials carry on and what other conclusions you come to. But yes, for now, thank you very much, Ad Spears, a lecturer in robotics and machine learning at Imperial College, for joining us here on RNIB Tech Talk. Well, just like that, it is it for another Tech Talk. But don't worry, you'll have us back next week. Thank you very much for listening. And as I've mentioned, if you want to get in touch about anything, whether you have a question or whether you have a suggestion or some feedback, or if you want to come on and talk about something tech-related, you can get in touch about all of that and probably more that I haven't thought of. How to do it, you ask? Well, it's the email address. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But until next week, from myself, Hubert Pavelkovich, Natalie Curran, and Jackie Brown, it's goodbye.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.